Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Today is the day. It's March the 1st, 2019. It is Friday. It is the first Friday of the month. And so all of those things, when you just sort of roll them up together, we say to ourselves, there's just all kinds of things going on today. It's National Pig Day. I have no idea how a person celebrates National Pig Day. I might just reread Charlotte's Web. And it is also a Peace Corps Day, Peanut Butter Lovers Day, World Day of Prayer. That's actually the first Friday of every month. World Compliment Day. So feel free to compliment me. The number here is, you can text me at 877-933-2484 if you've got a compliment. Let me compliment you for starting your day off with the encouraging words of the Lord, our God. Let me encourage you today to be a person who compliments others. Today's also Employee Appreciation Day. And so as I was listening to the news there at the top of the hour and the president, you know, talking to the military about being committed to be sure that they have what they need to do the jobs that we expect and call them to do and need them to do. I was reminded that on Wednesday we talked here on Mornings with Carmen with Bill English, and we took sort of the negative side of this, like all of the things that employers, managers do that are actually like demoralizing and discouraging to employees. So you can just flip that list and do the opposite. So today on Employee Appreciation Day, please, as an employer, as a manager, as a leader of an organization, as an entrepreneur, as a citizen. So government workers today are actually employees who we should each and all be appreciating. Stay focused on the main thing. Value them. Compliment them. So this is a good way to check off both World Compliment Day and Employee Appreciation Day. Give them what they need to do their jobs. And then, you know, frankly, get out of their way. Don't micromanage people. If you've hired good people to do good things, let them do it and encourage them to do it as unto the Lord, right? Not for you, not for the praise of their employer, but, you know, frankly, because everything that we do is an acknowledgement of who God is and that we've been called to reveal his glory through the labor of our lives. So whatever you do today, do it unto the Lord. Appreciate others who are laboring around you and with you and for you, and share a compliment with someone today. Next up here on Mornings with Carmen, our weekly visit with Adam Holtz from Plugged In and all things media. I'll be right back. Good morning, Adam Holtz from Plugged In. I hope you've had a cup of coffee already today. How you doing?
I've had two lovely cups of coffee, and I would just like to compliment you on your last segment. I thought it sounded great, Carmen.
Oh, well, thank you. So I'm supposed to say that Adam's joining us via Skype because we want to give, you know, Skype all the cred for having how good you sound. So we appreciate that. So, Adam, you posted a really great thing this week called Culture Clips. And so I would really just like to like roam around in Culture Clips this week. And for folks who want to find it, it's at pluggedin.com. So I want to start with these spaces that we imagine are safe for our kids.
Uh-huh.
We've been reminded this week that even places that we imagine are safe for our kids online are not always safe. Tell us what is going on with YouTube.
You know, YouTube Kids is supposedly a video place where the content has been vetted. It's supposed to be safe. You know, you wouldn't want to turn your kid loose on YouTube without any filters or oversight. But theoretically, YouTube Kids is supposed to be fine. Well, this week a story came out that there are some videos that have really horrific messages embedded within them. One of them in particular gives really graphic instructions on how to successfully commit suicide. And I mean, it's just pretty horrifying. And so there have been people sort of raising the rallying cry and saying, look, this is not something that you can automatically just believe is safe for your kids and cease to exercise any oversight. But you've got to be engaged. You've got to be paying attention and really understand that even stuff that's supposedly vetted, that necessarily isn't, you know, that's not necessarily true. And, you know, I think that the takeaway here is just the importance of engagement, Carmen. It's not that we never do anything online again or that we have to live in total fear that it's all terrible, but neither can we assume that stuff that's supposedly just fine is. So as parents, you need to know what your kids are looking at online. You need to be engaged with them. You need to be talking with them about, you know, if there's a time they're online and you're not right there, hey, have you seen anything? And just communicating to them that the lines of communication are open in case they run into something unexpected.
So I had a conversation this week with Justin Earley, and he wrote a book called The Common Rule. And one of the things that he talks about in there is the need to curate our media. And when I read this week and heard about this week in terms of YouTube Kids, and I think about, as parents, how we try to help our kids become good curators of media. Adam, I'll just admit to you, it was pretty convicting because I'm not sure I'm a great curator, right? I'm sort of just a voracious consumer of media. Not necessarily on the YouTube front, but talk with us about how we help our kids become discerning curators of media.
Well, I think that you have to be engaged with them, and what that would look like, I think, I haven't ever thought about curating media for my kids exactly the way you're talking about it, but you need to watch stuff ahead of time. You need to probably watch it with them and then have a conversation afterward about what did you see, what did you like, what did you identify with, what was, you know, something that you thought, I'm not sure what I think about that. And I think with our kids, one of the things that we're trying to do to help them develop a Christian worldview is we just have these ongoing compare and contrast conversations of, you know, how does that connect with what we believe? Is that similar to what we believe? Is it different? And it doesn't mean that sometimes, you know, if something's on that is different than what we believe, that you just turn it off and you disengage. But it does mean that we're modeling to our children that there's a process of critical thinking involved. And so I think in terms of curating, that to me is another level of intentionality where you're finding stuff ahead of time that you have already vetted that you can lead them through. And I think that sounds really terrific. I think it sounds a little bit time consuming, so it demands a level of intentionality. But there's so much content out there, Carmen. I mean, I forget what the stats are on how many videos are uploaded to YouTube every minute, but it's a staggering amount of content. So, you know, on one hand, coming up with some things for your kids to watch ahead of time sounds good, but I think you also have to be able to prepare them to be able to navigate things when you're not there, because even if you curate something, they can click onto something else. So I think it's a both and kind of strategy.
Okay. So in terms of things that have like freaked people out in the last couple of days, there's this thing called the Momo Challenge, and we can probably dispense with this pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So because I'm now reading like across my feed this morning, parents are panicked over the Momo Challenge as it circulates on social media. The Momo Challenge is not real. Parents, please stop freaking out over the Momo Challenge. should I or should I not freak out over the Momo Challenge?
Well, you don't need to freak out over it. You just need to know that for a moment, for a day or two, this has captivated the viral attention of parents and kids. And whether it's real or not, I mean, it's, you know, how do you decide whether something is fake news? There is this image of this bird-like, almost demonic creature that pops up in some of these videos and instructs kids to do everything from, you know, go in and turn your oven on, which probably is a bad idea, all the way to, you know, stuff that involves self-harm and suicide. And I guess it depends on who you listen to, how prevalent those messages are. But again, the message here for families as they talk to their kids is, okay, we have to think critically about this. If something freaky looking comes on and tells you to do something bad to yourself, what do? You know, you don't do it. You turn it off. You tell us so that we can have a conversation about it. So it's not something that we need to freak out over. It's something that we need to approach wisely and soberly and just understand, you know, that's the scare du jour, but next week it'll be something else. These challenge videos aren't going to stop. So as parents, we just need to be aware that's a part of the internet and YouTube culture. So what do we do with that? Because really it's just peer pressure in sort of a different format. And so we need to help our kids think critically about that.
If you've just joined us, I'm Carmen LaBurge. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. My guest is Adam Holtz from Plugged In. We are talking about all things media. And in just a minute, we are going to talk about an R rating for a movie called Unplanned. And we're also going to talk about the Oscars. I'm Carmen LaBurge. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen.
It's a beautiful morning.
It is a beautiful morning here on Mornings with Carmen. Thank you for joining us in this conversation. I am talking with Adam Holtz from Plugged In. He's joining us via Skype. Adam, let's talk about how movies get their ratings. And then specifically, let's talk about the forthcoming movie Unplanned, which tells the story of how former Planned Parenthood director Abby Johnson became a pro-life advocate. It's been given an R rating by the MPAA. Tell us how that happens and why it matters.
The MPAA stands for the Motion Picture Association of America, and it's a group of parents, actually, who get together and watch movies, and they have, they would say, an objective list of criteria that enables them to give a movie a rating. And it's actually, from what I understand, really, really specific. But just because it's specific, that doesn't make it consistent, you know. And so, for example, if you have a PG-13 movie can have up to 2 F words, but if it has 3, it's going to get an R rating, unless it's a weird, you know, some sort of. Yeah, they sometimes say, well, if it's because it's a historical exception, maybe we'll give it a PG-13. But it could have 100 S words and still get a PG-13. So. Even though there are these objective criteria, we could still look at the criteria and say, boy, that seems like a weird place to draw the line, which is why it's important for parents to understand that the rating system is just a jumping off point. And mm-hmm. what they think deserves an R rating may not be something you think deserves an R rating. So you got to do your research. But then there's this gray area with thematic material, and increasingly it seems like with conversations about religion, with conversations about anything that's kind of a hot-button issue in the culture, they have been rating things more severely for subject matter. And I haven't yet seen Unplanned, so I don't know how graphic either the visuals are or the conversations about abortion. But apparently the MPAA thought that they were graphic enough to warrant an R rating. That seemed to come as a surprise to the movie's creators. So it seems like it may be getting penalized for dealing with a hot and button issue from a conservative point of view. And not having seen the film yet, I can't comment on whether that's accurate or not, but that certainly seems to be the buzz that sometimes these conservative movies are not politically correct and they may be being rated more severely.
So because you and I have the privilege of talking every Friday, we can circle back around to this because I do think that this is a film that a lot of Christians are going to be interested in. I'm also one of those people who feels like that an R rating it makes it more popular in the culture anyway. And so there's a chance that more non-Christians will see the film because it has an R rating. And so I don't want to necessarily second guess that getting an R rating is a bad thing. And I don't want Christians to see a film and take their kids to see a film that's got content, you know, that probably accurately portrays abortion and what it really is, which is extremely violent. And, you know, and not know sort of in advance that that's coming. So, but you and I can circle back around to that. Hey, the Oscars were this past, or the Academy Awards were this past Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm not really interested in talking about that. What I would like to talk about are the Plugged In Movie Awards, because you guys at PluggedIn.com, you have done some movie awards for 2019. And so I'd rather talk about the Plugged In Movie Awards for 2019 instead of the Oscars. Can we do that?
That sounds terrific. Yeah, each year for the last five or six years, we have done Plugged In Movie Awards in four categories: Best Movie for Kids, Best Movie for Teens, Best Movie for Adults, and Best Christian Movie. And so we invite those who come to our blog to vote. So we have a reader's pick and then our pick, and sometimes those picks are the same, sometimes they're different. This year for kids,
Let's do it like they do it. Okay, so I'm going to read the nominees, and then you are going to say who the winner is.
I love it.
Is that good?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Yep, perfect.
So the nominees in the category for Best Movie for Kids are, now if we had some cool music, but anyway, Christopher Robin, Dr. Seuss's The Grinch, Incredibles 2, Paddington 2, Teen Titans Go to the Movies. And the winner is...
And the winner is Paddington 2.
Yay!
Yay!
Tell us why.
Paddington 2 was one of the most delightful movies I have seen in years. It was the best rated movie on Rotten Tomatoes of 2018, which means it had 100% rating and it had the most positive reviews of any movie out there. It's just a lovely movie about a bear and the family that adopts him. This time around, Paddington is wrongly accused of a crime and goes to prison. So your teddy bear goes to prison, right? But he manages to transform that prison by being kind and being decent. And so it's just a terrific movie about how even in situations where you would think you could be bitter or angry or lash out, continuing to hold to those quiet virtues can have a transformative influence on those around us. I loved it. One of my favorite movies of last year.
All right, in the category for the best movie for teens, the nominees were Black Panther, Little Women, The Miracle Season, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and Tomb Raider. And Plugged In's pick is?
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which I will also note was the Academy's picture for Best Animated Picture this year. You know, Black Panther got all the buzz this year, but Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse was just a terrific movie about a sort of an alternate universe take on the Spider-Man story, but it emphasizes courage, it emphasizes friendship, it emphasizes really being comfortable in who you are, and it just felt like an altogether different kind of superhero movie than we're used to seeing. You know, a little violence, a few small caveats. People will want to check out our review before going, but on balance, just a terrific movie for teens to go see.
And in the category of Best Movie for Adults, the nominees were Leave No Trace, Mary Poppins Returns, A Quiet Place, Searching, and Won't You Be My Neighbor? And the winner is...
Leave No Trace. And if you're thinking, what was Leave No Trace? It didn't leave any trace in my memory either. You are in good company. This was a small independent movie that was here and gone in about a week and made about $10 at the box office. And so one of the reasons we picked it was to let people know about it. It is about a father and daughter, and the father has PTSD, and they live in a forest. And he's severely mentally ill, and he has raised his daughter in the forest. And basically, he's a survival expert, and so she has all of these crazy skills to survive. But then, of course, they come into contact with humanity, and it's really about her wrestling with, you know, what does it look like to remain faithful to my dad, but to understand that there's this whole world out there, and that maybe my dad actually needs some help. It's an intense movie. But it's a movie with essentially no content at all. It's a PG-rated independent drama, which, if you know anything about indie movies, they're never rated PG, but this one was, and it really is an interesting movie to check out on Netflix or Amazon or wherever you want to get a hold of a copy of it.
Okay, and then for Best Christian Movie, the nominees are God Bless the Broken Road, God's Not Dead, A Light in the Darkness, I Can Only Imagine, which would get my vote, Paul, the Apostle of Christ, which was also very good, An Unbroken Path to Redemption. And Plugged In's pick is?
Paul, the Apostle of Christ. We really liked this movie, and I think, especially if you have spent a long time or a lifetime reading scripture, sometimes we read these stories and we don't really think about the context. But this is a movie that gives context to who Paul the Apostle was and the challenges he faced and what life was like for him in prison. So it really is a movie that I think fleshes out our understanding of exactly what Paul was writing about and the situation in which he was in when he wrote about those things. So definitely worth checking out, as is I Can Only Imagine. I liked it a lot too.
Adam Holt from Plugged In, thanks for being with us again today on Mornings with Carmen.
Thanks, Carmen.
You guys are listening to Mornings with Carmen, and I'm Carmen LaBerge. Okay, so 3 weeks ago, a new Barna Group report that they did in collaboration with Alpha, which is an evangelism ministry, reported that almost half, or 47%, of practicing Christian millennials, so we want to talk about Christian millennials here, told the research group that, quote, it's wrong to share one's personal beliefs with someone of a different faith in hope that they will one day share the same faith. So it's going to be important here to define what is meant by the term Christian or practicing Christian, what is meant by the term millennial, and what is meant by sharing one's personal beliefs in such a way that you hope the other person would share that same faith. So is that evangelism, and is that what evangelism meant to the people who were asked? So this research would be like seriously troubling if we actually imagined that 47% of practicing Christian young adults in America think evangelism is wrong, but I'm not exactly sure that that's what it means. So to have this conversation, we are actually going to talk with a Christian millennial. His name is Chris Martin from Lifeway Social, and that's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
That's such an important piece, because having that relationship in place, part of that is inspiring in them this idea of who they're going to be.
You may not have thought about this, but you can inspire a child. Here's Ellen Schuchnick on Focus on the Family Minute.
I really think that when we show that we believe in a grandchild or a child, that's necessary for them to even believe in themselves. That we have to hold out that hope. Yeah. And I find that even for my grandkids or my kids, when they're discouraged, because kids do dumb things and they get discouraged on how their kids are acting, is to always be that person who can say, listen, you're going to get through this. Joey's going to be fine. Kate's going to be okay. Hadassah's going to be fine after this. Offering hope to the parents, our adult kids, and to the kids, keeping that hope alive.
More from Ellen at familyminute.org.
God has given you talents and experience. When you're ready to put those to work for His purpose, prepare yourself with training in ministry at the University of Northwestern. Go into full-time ministry, or use your knowledge and skills as a lay leader, volunteer, or in the community. Serve God by earning a certificate, a bachelor's or master's degree, online or on campus at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. Go to unwsp.edu/startnow. unwsp.edu/startnow.
Today on Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram, Chip continues his series, Love, Sex, and Lasting Relationships, with a specific revelation about relationships. There's a better way to do them than what we've learned from our culture and Hollywood. If you or someone you know is exhausted from the endless treadmill of relationships that end in disaster, if you want to know a better way to do relationships, don't miss Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram.
Mornings at 11 on Faith Radio.
What's the one thing a girl can't live without? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Even if your teen tries to tell you otherwise, she can live without her cell phone, her makeup, and the pair of boots too. But the one thing she really does need to survive is relationship. Just as we were created to walk with our Heavenly Father, our children are wired to seek a personal relationship with us. So trust me on this one. If your daughter isn't finding a relationship with mom and dad at home, she'll try to fill the void elsewhere with things like guys, girlfriends, academics, and sports, or even turn to destructive habits like drugs or alcohol. Have you developed a meaningful relationship with your daughter? Give her what she can't get from anywhere else, a true sense of value and love.
Looking for more parenting wisdom?
Go online to ParentingTodaysTeens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
News related to a recent Barna research is that 47% of millennial Christians, so practicing Christians who are in the millennial generation here in the United States of America, don't necessarily think that evangelism is even right, let alone are they particularly interested in doing it. So I thought we would bring Chris Martin on to talk about it, to talk about what we're maybe misunderstanding about millennial Christians and how we might open up conversations with Christians we know who are in this particular generation about this research. So, Chris, welcome back to Mornings with Carmen.
Hey, Carmen. Thanks for having me on. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just start with this. When we refer to millennials, let's remind everybody who we're talking about.
Yeah, it's it can be confusing because different groups define the millennial generation in different ways. Generally speaking, I like to say that millennials are those born between the years of 1980 and 2000, though some say maybe like 1981 and 1995 or 97. So really, just as a general, a lot of the research, particularly from the Pew Research Center, which has done some of the most prolific research on millennials in general, whether it be religious or otherwise, they tend to use the broader 80 to 2000 range. So that's what I tend to use. But it's really, you know, people who right now are probably in their mid-30s to mid-20s or you know, late 30s to early 20s. Most millennials are out of college at this point. You know, even if you take the youngest millennials right now, if they were born in 2000, they're going into college, but most people don't use that 2000 date. So at the youngest, they might be in college, but at their oldest, they're in their late 30s.
I think that's really helpful because there are times that when we think of millennials, we think of them as stuck in time, like, right, they're high school and college age students. That's not who we're talking about at all. And so we are talking about adults. We're talking about Christians who are adults in the culture. This notion that we're talking about practicing Christians is also relevant to the conversation. When Barna talks about a practicing Christian, who are they talking about?
I think they're talking about Christians who are attending church semi-regularly. They're involved in their church in some way, not just Christians who are answering that they believe a particular thing or you know, maybe mentally ascend. You know, it's a lot of times when you're dealing with polls that are defining evangelicals, there are people who answer a question that's simply, are you an evangelical or are you not? And that can be kind of a low bar for being an evangelical. Most evangelicals would say that's kind of a low bar, you know, just saying you are or saying you're not. It's easier. It's better. You get better data when you make sure that you're asking evangelicals who are actually practicing evangelicalism and not simply ticking a box on a survey, answering yes or no to a single question. So I think when Barna and others tend to find practicing evangelicals, they're looking for evangelicals who are attending church a couple times a month and are participating in the local church in some way.
So, Chris, I think that you have you've actually just landed on what I perceive to probably be the most interesting part of this conversation, and that's a conversation about the meaning of words and relationships and why we're in relationships with other people and to what end. And so words really matter when we're talking about how questions are asked in research and how the person hearing that question may hear the question differently than the person who wrote the question. So help us get into the millennial mindset here. When a person in the millennial generation hears somebody talking about people of different faith, and they know that in their constellation of friends, in their interactions and relationships, they have friends across a wide, broad spectrum of different Christian denominations, different expressions of Christianity and pseudo-Christianity. And then they have people who are not believers of any variety, and they have people in their lives who are authentically engaged, practicing what would be recognized as actual other faiths. So when a millennial hears this, I think that they're operating out of a life experience and a diversity of friendships that people in older generations in America simply don't have. Am I reading that right?
I think so, yeah. I spent a number of years working with Ed Stetzer at Lifeway Research, and one of the most important things that I learned when getting into the research space, really for the first time, was my first job out of college. One of the things I remember learning very quickly is that if there's ever a piece of data that's in a set of research that seems to conflict with other pieces of data in that research set itself, or other data we've seen in other research projects along the same lines, you need to ask more hard questions about that particular question or piece of data that seems to be the anomaly. And I think when we look at this piece of data where 47% of millennials say that it is wrong to share one's personal beliefs with someone of a different faith in hopes that they will one day share the same faith, there are a number of factors we have to consider, one of which is the wording of the question, which we can get into in a minute. To address your question, I think that millennials having more diverse friend groups than their parents or grandparents have had plays a huge role in this. And millennials tend to adopt more of a live and let live philosophy that older generations, boomers, Gen X, and even the elder generation before those, they simply don't have that same perspective. And I think part of that is age. I think as you get older, you kind of leave the live and let live philosophy behind. You're more likely to leave that philosophy behind. So young people tend to live and let live a little bit more regardless of generation. So I think this question, for a lot of young people, probably makes them think, millennials makes them think that they're being asked if they should sort of colonize their friends of other religions. Like, should they pillage them from their other religions? And it almost sounds like it could be a conflict sort of question. And they may genuinely not know if that's right or wrong. I think again, a lot of it goes into the wording of the question, but we can go there if you'd like.
Right. Let's do that in just a minute. I'm talking with Chris Martin from Lifeway Social. You can find him on Twitter at ChrisMartin17 and at Lifeway. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. So, Chris, let's continue our conversation about millennial Christians and the conversation about evangelism. So let's talk specifically about the question they were asked. And then I'd love for you to simply comment on your experience of Christians in this generation and what it means for them to publicly live their faith in Jesus Christ and how that maybe communicates evangelism in a different way than the question asked.
Yeah. So when a millennial is asked the question, or it's more of a statement that they were asked to agree or disagree with, I'll restate the statement so we can all be on the same page. They were asked to agree or disagree with the following. It is wrong to share one's personal beliefs with someone of a different faith in hopes that they will one day share the same faith. And this 47% of millennials, or just under half, said that, yes, it is wrong to share one's beliefs in hopes of kind of converting them to summarize it. But that was in conflict with some of the other pieces of data, like 94% agreed that the best thing that could ever happen to someone is for them to come to know Jesus. 96% said part of my faith means being a witness about Jesus. So millennials clearly believe that it's important to show others the importance of following Jesus and the richness that comes along with that. Millennials, the importance of following Jesus, the life-changing nature of that is not lost on millennials. I think that's important to note because that does really seem to be in conflict with the question where almost half of them say it's wrong to share one's personal beliefs. And I think a lot of it, Sarah Zylstra from the Gospel Coalition did a really nice write-up on this a couple days ago on what millennials actually believe about evangelism. In fact, it was just yesterday. And she digs into this exactly, this exact question. Is it the wording? And I think it is. It's possible, as she says, for young people to focus on the of a different faith part of that question, part of that phrase, and think of Catholics or even a Protestant denomination different from theirs. When they hear of a different faith, they just may think of someone who isn't the same type of Christian that they are. because they simply just don't understand how the different areas of Christianity work. Or again, like you said before, they may have friends who are Muslims or Buddhists or atheists and agnostics. They may not even think of atheism or agnosticism as another faith. So maybe they're more open to converting friends who are sharing the gospel with friends who are atheists or agnostics, but they're not as open with sharing with friends who are Muslims or Buddhists or of another faith and really, really active in that other faith, of which millennials are probably more friends with those people than their older generation counterparts are. So I think a lot of it is wrapped up in the wording of the question. I think if millennials were asked the question in a different way or asked to agree with a different statement, like they kind of were at the beginning, the first question, the first statement, part of my faith means being a witness about Jesus, 96% of millennials agreed with that. And so I think a lot of it has to do with the sort of when millennials hear the statement, share one's personal beliefs with someone in hopes of converting them, they may think of approaching someone at a grocery store aisle and saying, if you die tonight, where do you think you would go, heaven or hell? And that kind of evangelism, in my experience, both leading in the ministry I lead at my church and just talking with my peers, both presently and having a lot of conversations like this in college, that sort of evangelism that maybe was more common among older generations is very unappealing to younger generations like millennials and even Gen Zers following them.
So that was my takeaway as well. I felt like the reality for most people I know at this stage of the game is that authenticity in my relationships means I am going to be authentically Christian and I'm going to let you be authentically whatever you are. And I'm going to be in a relationship with you. And I'm not going to be in that relationship only until you convert to my faith. I'm going to be in a relationship with you long term, because that's you know, I'm called to be your friend or your coworker or your neighbor or whatever proximity brought us into relationship with one another. You are not a proselyte. I'm going to make up a word there if I try to continue that. You are not an evangelism project to me. You are, another human being who I am going to live in relationship with, and I'm going to communicate to you that you're created in the image of God, because I believe that about everybody. And the way I authentically live my faith in your presence and with you will, I believe, communicate over time the beauty of the truth of the gospel. And that doesn't mean I'm not going to share my faith with you. It means that I'm not going to be doing that with the constant goal of you're going to hell if you don't agree with me. Even though I know in my heart of heart, like that's what God has said about the dividing line of who Jesus is and that people need to come to him. And I have a genuinely evangelical concern, but I'm not necessarily a person who is wired for to have the conversation with people that sort of throws that gauntlet down in that particular way. And so I think I understand the way people may have heard the question and answered it and yet still be genuinely evangelical and be out there every day witnessing through their life that Jesus is not only Lord of the universe, but Lord of their life as well, and would like to be the Lord of the lives of others. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, 100%. It's always kind of been weird for me to kind of make that sort of turn or burn evangel. I've done it before. I've been in situations where youth pastors or ministry leaders have kind of been training me to do it, or I've tried to. I remember one time we went on a youth trip to Chicago when I was in high school, and we literally were just hanging out at Chicago subway stops having gospel conversations with people. And it was an interesting experience, to be sure, but there was no way of follow up or things like that. And so I think I think young people in general, because of both the culture they're growing up in and how they understand their friends exercising faith and spirituality, they know that their friends are not going to respond well to sort of a hard turn and burn gospel presentation that maybe has been popular in generations past. But they understand that building a relationship with someone over time and both exercising the gospel and how they live and then using that as a sort of means of having deeper gospel conversations over dinner rather than with a random stranger in the grocery store aisle is perhaps more effective and just more natural. And so I think it makes 100% sense to me that younger people would find the sort of question or statement that they were asked to agree with a little bit more disagreeable than generations that came before them. I don't think it communicates that millennials are uninterested in sharing their faith generally, because there are multiple questions in the same Barna survey that just aren't as clickbaity that prove that millennials are interested in sharing their faith, just perhaps maybe not in the same ways that generations before them have done. And I think we need to accept that and encourage that.
Okay, so hey, in 30 seconds, Susie's birthday was on February 27th. You posted this adorable picture on your Twitter feed of you and Susie, but you never tell us who Susie is.
Yes, Susie's my wife. Yes, it was her
birthday.
Okay,
this is the cutest picture. This is the cutest picture of two 15-year-olds I have ever seen.
We were 15. We had just met a couple years ago and before that. And we were on a mission trip in Biloxi, Mississippi, cleaning up after Hurricane Katrina. That we were standing on the beach of Biloxi, Mississippi, right next to a broken down bridge that got destroyed by Katrina, cleaning up some debris there on the beach. So, yeah, that's what that's from.
That you guys are so cute. So happy birthday to Susie and blessings upon the two of you. We're going to have to leave it right there. Chris Martin from Lifeway Social, thank you so much for joining us today on Mornings with Carmen.
Thanks. Have a great weekend.
Well, we are just about out of time together here on Mornings with Carmen. I genuinely appreciate the time that you invest in these conversations each and every day. So thank you for joining me here and taking me with you wherever you have been in the last couple of hours. You can check out what we're doing at myfaithradio.com. Today is Friday, so I want to wish you a great weekend and encourage you to be a blessing to others out there in the world that God so loves. Happy Compliment Day, and, well, frankly, happy Pig Day. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.